I'm Evan DeWald, and I am joined by Tara Lindsley, and we are the voices behind the Unpacked podcast. On the Unpacked podcast, one of the things we love to do is talk about life and storytelling, and sometimes life gets messy and vulnerable and all those things. So we have conversations with counselors, with psychologists, with industry leaders, storytellers, and just regular humans that are making a difference in the world.
Yeah, and we're just hoping to grow and reflect and heal together. So you can find our podcast anywhere you subscribe to your podcasts. New episodes come out every Thursday. Enjoy.
Make sure to like and subscribe.
See you there. Hey, Tara.
Hey.
Here we are again.
I know.
Series on Haiti.
Just a quick little one.
Just a little series. Hey, if you are jumping on and you've just jumped onto this episode, I'd encourage you to jump back a couple. Mm-hmm. Listen to the intro episode so you hear a little bit of what we're up to in Haiti. And then you're going to hear a little bit today from just one of the most inspiring people I know.
He is literally one of my favorite people.
Yep.
On the entire planet.
Yep. He is changing his world and has, in so many ways, as he's told the stories of Haiti and lived the life of a Haitian as a doctor caring for his community. I think his influence is far reaching, even when I think about how I care for my community.
Me too.
How he operates and how he works. And yeah. My whole definition of generosity, for example, has changed because of this person.
And he's lived a wild story.
He has.
Right? Like his life is so fascinating. And the funny part about him is he tells his life story different slightly every time.
Yeah.
Like not a lie, just new details come out, yeah. Different angles of a story come out every time we've heard it.
Yeah. And I've gotten to hear him share with so many different groups as he's gone. And for sure, there's a story in this episode I have not heard. And anyways, beautiful human, Dr. Mono. Runs a clinic that specializes in diabetic care, but cares for lots of others called Sante 2000 in a community called Haut-Limbé. And he is amazing.
He is. And we recorded this live while we were in Haiti with him.
Little bit of chickens, little bit of rain.
Yeah, a little background noise kind of thing happening, but it's like real authentic moment with him, which was really cool.
We even used some special mics. We weren't using these nice big ones. So yeah, I hope that you enjoy this episode. Check out different ways that you can get involved and give, and even sharing this episode with others who might be interested in financially giving towards some of the work that we're doing in Haiti. We think it's important stuff. So I hope that you enjoy this. I hope it's inspiring to you. I hope it changes the way you see your community and the people around you. So again, enjoy Dr. Mono. Oh, Tara.
Gonna be good.
We're finally here.
I know.
We made it all the way to Haiti.
We keep talking about it.
Yes. And now we are hot and wet. Very wet.
It's winter time.
So it's cold?
Yes.
We're not feeling cold.
I'm not feeling the cold, but I'm so glad that we're here and that you always, I'm always glad, Dr. Mono, when you give us a little bit of your time and you share your story. I have heard you tell your story many times and it never gets old. Never gets old. So can you, I want to go all the way back, but for right now, can you just tell us a little bit about who's Mono today?
I'm getting old, for sure. I don't know if I'm getting wiser, but kind of, I'm happy where I am today. Hmm. It's been a long way, about 20 years of practice, mm-hmm. medicine in rural area. I've seen a lot. And I feel more confident right now in what I'm doing. Though I don't have as many dreams as before because...
You've made some of them happen.
You know, it's... Well, I'm happy with them. What I'm doing, that's the most important thing. Every time I like to go to sleep, stay in bed, but there's always this urgency of something. There's something I can do to make some changes, make someone feel better. Mm. I feel like I'm part of something, you know, like a symphony. It's like, you know, I'm trying to play my part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way I see it right now.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. And we're in, would this be considered a decent-sized village in northern Haiti? Would that be right?
Yes.
Called Haut-Lembe?
Yeah, Haut-Lembe is the one event that gave it, I would say, kick, make it different from other rural area. It was about 60 or 70 years ago. There were some missionaries that came here, the Hennais. So that's how the village started to build around their work. So they started a biblical school, and people come from all over the country to study there, so they had to stay. So there was this kind, so it started to be a place to receive people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this neighborhood grew up. And now we have the biblical school turned into university years ago. So this is, I would say, the main financial activity, the main attraction here. It's about education.
Yeah. It's a college town.
Yes.
And you grew up here.
Yes.
So what was little Mono like?
It was way different than here, than right now. And was a lot of kids, you know, running around naked. That's what it was. And I, like, last night, every time when it rains, I get this kind of nostalgia of those times, you know, all the boys would just go naked running around the neighborhood, you know.
Yeah, playing in the rain.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the normal thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't see it anymore. Kids don't do that anymore. But that, in my time, that was...
It's the normal thing to do. It was fun. Yeah. Yeah. You have some really interesting things. So that we'll get to. One of them, for me, that I find is really fascinating is that you speak multiple languages. But you learned English in kind of a unique way as a little guy.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, tell us the story behind how you came to learn English?
As I told you, there were this missionary compound.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the couple wanted the kids to speak Creole. And I was selected as a good kid because we have this way of measuring kids. Like, if you use bad words, you're a bad kid. So I was lucky. At my house, my parents never used bad words, so I was kind of cursing things like that.
Yeah.
And I was good at biblical school, Sunday school, because I have good memories. Anytime I would be the one answering the questions for my class, and then they pick me up to go play with their son.
And you were really excited for that, weren't you?
Yeah, I was excited about it because imagine being the poorest kid of the neighborhood to go play with the richest kid in the neighborhood. It's a big move.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But in return, it was humiliating.
Mm-hmm. That little bit of each.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because my friends used to tell me, I'm like a humiliating position that I'm the entertainer of this rich kid. Mm-hmm. Sort of, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you were supposed to only talk Creole with him?
Yes. So that was the deal. And they would speak English between themselves, and I was to speak Creole with this boy. And that's what I was doing. But I got to one point, I said that I don't want to do it anymore. Because my friends was kind of
making fun of you.
Yeah, about it. And my dad told me that, listen, let's them make fun of you. If there's one thing that you can pick up at this house, it's English. And I said, how am I going to learn to speak English? Because he doesn't speak. No one is teaching me English, you know, nothing. And I finally find one word. What is this?
Just what is this?
And with what is this, I build up my vocabulary. So everything I wanted to know how to say in English, I would ask.
What is this?
My friend. So what is this? And I was young. I was older than him. So he was forbidden to speak English with me, but he wasn't forbidding to tell me something. So that's how I build up my vocabulary. And then at one point, they had this satellite TV, what they call it, dish.
It was a big one. So yes. Those big old ones, big huge ones.
And now they had everything was in English. So
on the TV.
And without knowing, I was picking up things. And that's how it happened.
You've been a doctor for 20 years. I met you when you were actually in school on one of my trips here. And you have kind of a unique story as to how you decided that you wanted to go into medicine. Now, first of all, can you explain a little bit about how school worked then and even how it works now? Like, how did you, most kids didn't make it to grade 12 or whatever.
No, school is a luxury in Haiti. And I remember the first conversation I heard my parents were having about me I still laugh about it. When I was finishing my elementary school, I was very young at that time, 11 years old. And I had other classmates that were 20, 21, 22. So that was a problem for my family. See, what are they going to do with me? Because they can't afford to send me to high school. I remember that my dad said, "Well, we send him to mechanic." And my mom said, he will get TB. Because in Haiti, we believe that it's by lift. If you lift big weight, that's how you get TB.
Oh, okay.
So it's like people, because I will be holding big
weight,
and I will end up getting TB. See, and that was it. And no one wanted me to. Once you get TB, you a candidate to die. Yeah, I still remember that conversation. And then I end up and the only public school in Cape, we call them lycée.
Okay, lycée.
Lycée.
Okay.
It's a government school, but it was the only one in Cape. And I think my dad paid some money for me to get in. And he told me that, this is your only chance. If they kick you out, it's over. And that's how I stay in that school for 6 years till I graduated in high school.
And some of those people that you graduated in high school with were 25, 26 years old?
They were 40, people that were 40 years old. I was the only kid in that class.
I remember you saying that they put like blocks underneath of your desk
because
reach the floor with your feet.
I was the only kid, and all the big guys arrive, but they sit in front. So there were over 100 kids, about 120. So I had to sit all the way in the back, and I had to put 4 blocks. But that was my best year in school, I have to admit it. If there's only one year I would like to repeat in my life, is that year.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I was very shy all the time for many reasons. First, it's like being poor. You only have one pants, one shirts. You don't want to be messing with people, so that there are things that you don't want people to to remind you of. Like today, I was really sad when I see some kids. It reminds me of my life. They were coming from school, and they take their shoes off. It was raining. And the first thing I think is, they're going to get hurt because you have all the sort of things, and the water is And then I remember that that's the only shoe they have. It's meant to be protected.
So you just didn't want anybody to remind you of that when you were at school that year.
Yeah, it reminded you of your class, of who you are.
Yeah.
I was,
Yeah.
I was quiet most of the time. But first, if I go to your house, you would like to come to my house. And I don't want you to see where I live. So that's, but when I arrived in that class, it was my best, the only year I would enjoy. Though financially there was any difference. But I met a good friend, Max. I was poor, he was ugly. We create a radio called Joma, me and Joe Max Company.
Okay.
This was the most respected radio in the classroom.
And you were how old when you did this?
17 or 18. 17 or 18.
Okay. This is a new story to me.
Yeah. So this radio, it was a radio, but to give people hard time.
Yeah. Like it was making fun of things.
So it, me and Max, it's like we know that we're good in school. Okay. So we arrive because we had to take an official exam. We had good grades. So our self-esteem was high. And we arrived in our last year of high school that you are respected. Because I'm the first one in my family to graduate in high school.
Yeah.
So this is a big bang. And me and Max, we had some, how do you call it when you want, when someone owe you money, you go to get payback. But in Spanish, they call it cobrar. It's like we had some revenge to do. We had our radio stations. And every morning, everyone was waiting to see who is going to have a hard day.
Because you'd make fun of them.
Yes. We were bad. I have to say that. It's like, and people, everybody was afraid of us. So we would make fun of everybody. So that was for me, you know, we give people some hard time, and anyone who messed with us would have big problems. and because like we, because it was one point we accepted who we are.
Okay. Yeah. So you graduate from high school.
Yes.
And you decide to become a doctor.
No, that's
right. You decide something else.
No, it was when I was in high school.
Something happened.
Yeah, something happened. A guy that used to play soccer, very famous, got sick. And one day I heard that he needed money for surgery. And it happened I was there when the doctor said that. And they said, no, it's just a blockage. After the surgery, we'll be okay. And I came because as I told you, I used to play with this missionary kid. So I was, every door was open for me in this compound because I've been there for so many times. I was, you know, I was like an extended family at one point.
Yeah.
So I went and talked to all the missionaries and they gave money for the surgery. And after the surgery, the guy died. And the doctor said, you know, I thought it was a blockage, but when we went in, there was no blockage. So he didn't show any remorse or sympathy, whatever, you know, about
the death.
So I said, I want to be a doctor, but I want to be a different doctor.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say that out loud. For being poor, there are things that you don't dream of. It's out of your reach.
And a doctor was one of those things.
Yes. And after I graduated high school, I tried to get into medical school. I realized that there are big walls in society. There are things that, you know, that is not for everybody. Mm-hmm. That was my first social experience.
Mm-hmm. With that.
Yeah. So you needed a godfather to get in, because mm-hmm. it's only one school in Port Prince. They only take 100 kids. Mm-hmm. But imagine for me to be the first one in my family to graduate in high school. So I couldn't get into a medical school in Port Prince. I tried, I think, 3 times. I couldn't pass.
And then you decided to go to the military.
No. The lady that was, the lady that is my, the friends of my dad, was the cook in one of the house in Port Prince.
Okay.
It happened she was the cook of a general. Hmm. And she mentioned my name to the general, saying, is there a way that you can have? And he said, if he wants to be in the army, I can. Hmm. And then when she told me, the only door that is open is the army. I said, well, I'm going to be an army officer. Maybe I will have enough power. So all the members of my family will have someone, and, you know, with power that I will be able to, at some point in the future, help them get into medical school. So when I came here to tell my mom about this, my mom said, if the God that is I'm serving is alive, you won't make it to the military. The army was corrupted. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of violence. They were abusing the people. It was an army against the people. So, and then I came and I talked to the people and the missionary. And one of them told me that, is this what you want? I said, no. I said, why are you doing it? I said, okay. They want to study medicine. And I heard there's an opportunity in the Dominican Republic. I said, well, I might help you.
Was this Lori or Kathy?
Kathy.
This was Kathy.
That's how
yeah.
my journey to the Dominican Republic started.
And so, yeah, that's one of the things that maybe is helpful for people to understand at that time. There was really only one school to get into in Haiti.
100 students a year.
Yeah. Then you had to know somebody.
No, because if it's only 100 students, all the generals, they have yeah. family that need to get in. If you are a secretary of state, you have anyone that is in power.
Yeah.
And if you are a doctor, you have, if you are a teacher, you have, so it's kind of, yeah. It's always the same group of people getting.
So you have to go into the Dominic to do it then?
Yes.
Can you tell the group and tell us a little bit of like, what does that mean? What is going into the Dominic for a Haitian mean? And then what was school like?
I was the first group of Haitian that went to the Dominican Republic to study.
And you were permitted, you got a permit, and you were invited into the Dominican Republic with open arms.
I remember that I had my passport. I went, and by the visa, it was like $20 US. It was really cheap. Now it's $500.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
And as I was getting ready to go, I had, they gave me the name of a pastor. When I arrived to call. And the border was closed because there was an embargo. So I managed to get into illegally.
You snuck into the Dominic?
Yes.
To go to school?
Yeah. You pay, and the guy would take care of you on the road. They pay the army, the checkpoint, and everything. But I was so scared. And I didn't really know what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. And then still I arrived that night and I called the pastor. I was lucky because he was about to leave the church when he received my call. Mm-hmm. So like his office is in the church, but he lives somewhere else. So he was about to leave the office.
What did you have with you?
Nothing. Because as I was going illegally, I had to leave my suitcase, everything behind. Because they let you go as if you're going to buy. I arrived without nothing. I think except my passport. and some money. So imagine. And so I saw the pastor. I say, I'm a friend of this pastor. He said, oh, he was my teacher, then, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, you can stay at the church. Showed me the pews. You know, I can sleep there.
Anywhere, just pick a pew.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how it started.
And so you stayed in that church, though?
Yes, for a long time.
Do you remember how, was it years?
I don't remember the years. I can find it if I go back looking at my papers and...
Yeah, how long you were there.
Yes. But I started to sleep there with the embargo. Because I arrived, there was an embargo here. And that's when I arrived.
And you had a favorite pew, right? You had a favorite pew to sleep on and you didn't like when people stole your spot.
No, it's funny.
And you had a toothbrush?
That's the only, because the church is like a place for immigrants. So everybody that came from Haiti, all over, we might end up
sleeping there.
So it's like, I used to sleep here, and when normal days, you can be sleeping there for 2 weeks. No one bothers, because we are the same one. Everybody knows, you know, this place is for one, or this place is for Jean, you know. But if 10 new people arrive, they will go to bed early because they are tired. So there's no name. And when you arrive, you might see someone.
Okay, so it's funny because you know, in a traditional church in Canada or in the United States or whatever, people are creatures of habit. So they sit in the same pew on Sunday morning. This is how I used to keep attendance at church. So I could look out and be like, I know where the different families sit in the building. That's how you know where. So it always makes me laugh that this is where you were sleeping. It's like how they did like attendance at night for you.
That was the most boring thing.
Yeah.
You have to change place. But there's nothing in change of comfort. It's the same. But
same view. It's true. But medical school in the Dominic is in Spanish.
Yes.
And you didn't speak Spanish.
No.
So how do you manage to become a doctor?
When I arrived, I met other kids, healthy parents. They go to a place where they learn to speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Kind of school. But they couldn't afford to pay that school. But I was lucky. The pastor was paying for a newspaper. So they would deliver.
A newspaper?
Yeah. Every day. I know he does it like when they open it first. I don't know why, but he always enjoys his day, want to open it, and when he finishes to read it, it's a used paper now, it's mine.
So you would grab his newspaper after he had read it?
Yes.
And you would figure something else out as well?
And then I would read it, because it looked like French, Spanish. Then I realized I need, because most of the guys that were there didn't speak Spanish. And say, I would need a dictionary. I went and bought a dictionary. So every day I would read, still I find 5 new words. So when you look at the 5 new words, you might end up with even 20, 25 words, because you're looking for one, but curiosity, you look for the one on top and the one down.
In the dictionary.
Yes. So for every one word, you get 2 more words. And then I would try to listen to the news on the radio, because there was some guy with radio. Because most of the news, they just read what is on the newspaper. So I would try to see if I can catch up with. And in less than 3 months, I was...
Speaking Spanish.
I was okay.
You're ready to go to medical school.
And the funny thing is, those kids that were paying to learn, I was the one translating for them when they wanted to do things. They wanted to rent a house, they had to speak to a lawyer, they wanted to get the legal papers. I was the translator.
So you go to medical school. It took you, was it 4 years? How long did it take you roughly?
It took me like 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
Because I lost some semesters because I couldn't pay.
Yeah. And you, that was a real struggle because you didn't want to tell Kathy.
Anyway, that's the point. Kathy, now I can say she's my mom.
Yeah.
Because we've been, I know her forever. At the beginning, I didn't want to tell her the reality, not to scare her off.
Yeah. How much it was actually.
Yes.
So you were living in some pretty significant poverty.
Yeah. Because I couldn't charge her with renting a house that was about $50 US a month. Some room was 100 US. Because I believe they were sending me 100 US every month for my expenses. That was my budget.
Yeah. But in the end, you discovered it was Kathy and Kathy's mom.
Yes.
Who are they? Yeah, I don't think we've explained that.
Kathy's mom, it was a joke that we wanted to play on her. Because Kathy was living in the community teaching, because there was a school for missionary kids.
Yeah, so she was teaching the missionary kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she decided to come to visit Kathy. And I was good friend with Kathy. And Kathy was supposed to go to Poppins to pick her up. And they didn't want Kathy to be alone. Because at this time I was already 18, 19, something like that.
Yeah.
And Lori asked me to go with Kathy. And there was another lady called Martha that wanted to. There were two women.
Yep. And they needed you to go along.
Yeah.
Bodyguard.
Yeah, they didn't to have two. Now I understand they didn't. I didn't understand why they wanted me to go with them. But now I understand they didn't want to have two white women alone.
Yeah.
So they were talking, what should we say to Jane? That was her name.
Yeah, that's Kathy's mom.
Yes.
When she arrived.
They say, who's that man was your boyfriend? Say, my mom knows I would never date a kid. So what should they say? Well, say, this is your son. I like this idea. So that's how it started. And since that day, she has been a grandma for me.
Important.
She's been one of the most important person in my life. And I still call her grandma. Mm-hmm. And my first daughter got her name, Jane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's how.
Love it. So you have some interesting parts of your story that I feel like I have to point out. So you become a doctor to come back here?
No. Going to the Dominican Republic and studying medicine in the Dominican Republic, well, in Haiti, they were having all sort of chaos.
Yeah, it was wild. Right?
During that time, none of the teaching institution were able to finish a full year. It was always 4 months. It was always a problem. And when you graduate from the Dominican Republic, you have a diploma that you're going to work in most of the Latin American country. And if you go to the States, you can apply, take the board exam. The doors are open. But I was very critical about the leadership in Haiti, especially the Christian leadership. Telling them, things that they are supposed to do. Blaming them. It's like I was very hard on them. Very hard on people. When you come here, you see people praying all the time and you look at their life. Why
are you praying?
I keep praying at that. And it doesn't make sense to me at the time. And I say, those leaders, they are either telling the people a lie or something's wrong. And I was very mad. And in one of those trips, Kathy always come to visit with, because at that time she was, I think, the dean of a Bible school in Canada, and she would bring groups. When she bring groups, she would call me to come And this means for me that, you know, I'm going to see her. I'm going to have money. I'm going to eat well. It was party time.
Yeah.
So every time she comes, I would always come and spend the time with her while she's here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, you know, I was very critical to Nkati, you know, it doesn't make sense. This community is playing so hard. It's a nurse helper that is playing doctor, prescribing mm-hmm. antibiotics, you know, and killing babies.
Yeah.
And say without, you know. And, you know, I talk, I think it's, you know, give the worst picture of the people here, how bad they are, the Christian leaders, that they're not doing anything
to help, actually, with the medical side of things. Yeah.
What has changed is what Kathy told me. Mono, you can either be part of the problem or part of the solution. That's why I decided, you know, I'm going to put my knowledge in service of my people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't regret it.
So you come back. This is what I find is fascinating. So you come back here.
Yes.
To your own hometown.
Yes.
To be a doctor.
Yes, with no job.
And so how do people receive little Mono?
Well,
comes back into town now. Well,
it was,
as a doctor, you like, well, what was that like for you? That must have been frustrating.
No, it was hard.
Yeah. They didn't accept you as a doctor.
No, it was hard. And I had to face a lot of prejudice. But the good thing is I was working for free.
Mm-hmm. That's the good thing.
Yes, because if I was looking for a salary, maybe I wouldn't be here today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Kathy decided that the same $100 she was giving me as a student, she will continue to give me that money while I'm trying to find a life.
Mm-hmm.
So by providing my service for free, it started to give result.
Mm-hmm. Because people...
Then slowly, people started to believe in it. And then at one point, this is the funny thing, this is how life works. I met a doctor that came. She was excited to work with me. And when she finds out, she's she came for 1 week.
Okay.
When she finds out that I wasn't making any money, and I had a family. And she decided to support me financially.
Mm.
And she went and talked with one of the missionaries. And the missionary told her, we don't think Mano is a doctor. We think he didn't graduate.
Oh, man.
That was the hard part. And listen to that story. That's how, see how it's funny.
Yeah, it's funnier.
And then, but she worked with me. She saw me in action. That's what I love about. Yeah, I used to say white people, but I don't say white people now. That's what I would love about educated people.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with college. It has to do with education.
Mm-hmm.
She was in kind of, how do you call it? What she see is different from what she heard.
Mm-hmm.
And she was friend with a doctor at Lekai. She called this doctor and said, hey, I want you to check on this guy for me because I want you to check on his credentials, see how he can work. I will pay for the time. So I want him to be your intern. She didn't say, she didn't tell me the real reason.
Okay.
But managed to convince me, you know, I think as a young doctor, you need more experience. I will pay for you to go to the Kai. There's a big hospital. You will work with this doctor that used to teach and many college and hospitals in the States. So I think it would be a good experience for you. All right. And she said, I will give you a salary to you.
You go and do it.
Yeah. It was like $300 or $400. For the first time, I was getting money to send to my family now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she would pay everything for me to be at Lekai. So I'm going to make this story short for you. So I arrived at Lekai. And the first day at work, the doctor said, you will be working with me when I realize that you can work on your own. I will give you a box.
A box?
Yeah, an office.
Oh, an office. Okay, okay. Give me an office. Okay. Get your own box.
Yeah. And here I am. I had no idea it was an exam, but I was eager to know. And the first patient that arrived, blah, 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 I think, that's what's wrong with him. After like six patients, he said, but you can work on your own.
What are you doing here?
The same day, I had my office, but before going to Lakai, I had to send all my papers.
Okay.
Showing that, you know, I am this.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that story, Kathy came to my graduation. And when she came, I said, Kathy, for all those years you've been sending me money, you never asked me any proof that I was studying medicine.
Could have been doing anything in the demand. Yeah. Could have been doing anything anywhere.
Yeah. And for the graduations, there will be like 4,000 to 5,000 students. Anyone can dress and go and graduate.
Mm. What did that say to you about Kathy?
She said, Simone, I trust you. Mm-hmm. For me, that was important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important in a way that to know that someone trusts you, it keeps you from doing something that, you know, this that will hurt this person. So I used to tell people, you know, I'm a Christian today, not because I believe in God. I do believe in God. I don't want you to misinterpret what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I feel more Christian because of some people that I feel accounted to. There are things that I don't want Kathy to call me and say, well, did you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. There are things that I don't want to answer. I mean, she trusts me.
Yeah, and I'm not going to abuse that trust.
Yeah,
in any way.
And for the first time this year, after graduation, they announced all students will receive the diploma the same day. And Kathy was in line with me when they called my name and they gave me my diploma. And I opened it. It was. Because some school would give you like just a piece of paper.
Yeah.
But I open it, I still have that picture, my name. And when I said to Kathy, I said, tell them I was there. It's like, I don't care what they think of it, but for me,
that was important.
You graduated, I was there. And
yeah. I did what I said I was doing.
And guess what? After I spent like 3 months with this doctor, I learned so much.
Yeah.
Mm.
He didn't want me to come back here. He wanted to hire me. Mm. But what I learned from him saved so many lives here.
Mm. Yeah.
So the lesson is, someone was going to hurt me, but at the end of, he blesses me.
Mm. Yeah.
So I become a better doctor. And when I came back here, I was confident about what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah. So you start up you're a doctor in this community. You grow a passion for a specialty. Is there a story behind the passion for your specialty?
No, it's.
Or did you just start seeing it as a need that grew?
There was no need. It was just a question. Remember, I talked to you about Dr. Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel honored to know him. I was lucky because he's you know, the big doctor in Lembe.
Dr. Steve.
Yes, yes. And actually, when I was a kid, I had access to him.
Hmm.
He doesn't remember that, but for me, that's I wanted to be like him at one point. Yeah. Because being this poor kid in the neighborhood that played with Tony, they see me as a maid. And for him to be the doctor in chief, I remember that. My mom or my dad was sick. I went to him because he used to come to the compound.
Yeah.
I used to go to his compound to play with other kids. But when my mom or my dad was sick, I went with one of them because in his hospital, they used to receive 400, 500 people a day. So they couldn't see all.
Yeah.
A lot of people have to stay over or go to other places. I remember I saw him. I said, "Dr. Steve, would you see my either my mom or my dad for me that is sick?" He said, "Oh, no problem, Manu."
Mm-hmm.
with this humility. So that one of the things that those two doctors, the one that didn't care about the patient that died and Dr. Steve.
Who knew your name?
Yeah.
And would you see my parents for me?
Mm-hmm.
And I end up, when I'm working here, I end up sending him a letter. They would you like to come and work with me because he was retiring. They said, no problem. He came.
Mm-hmm.
And after months working, I didn't see any diabetes.
Hmm.
And I asked him, in the Dominican Republic, there are so many diabetes here. None. Is there a problem? He said, no. They don't live around long.
They don't live.
Yeah, once you're diagnosed with diabetes, you only have 2 years to live. Mostly type 1. If you're type 2, it might be 5 years, but, you know, it's...
Hmm.
That's what it is.
It's a death sentence. That's the way you've referred to it multiple times in our conversations.
Yes. And then one day, as I was, there were some problems on the roads. And a patient, actually, I have her papers with me, her ID. I took a picture of it. I call her my angel. And I think she gave her life for me to be who I am today. He showed me the way. And as I was leaving the clinic, they said they came with her. Very pretty. Very, very pretty lady. And sick. I said, wow, what a beauty. And say, what's wrong with her? Oh, she's diabetic. We were taking her to a hospital and kept the border closed. We want to know, we take her here. I don't have anything here for diabetic. She's my first one. Not even a glaucoma, nothing. There was nothing that they could do. They didn't want to take her right away to take her home. Just, and she told me, I want to die. I'm a burden. I couldn't understand it. And 2 or 3 weeks after I saw her family, I said, how is she doing? They were relieved to tell me she died.
What does it mean that she was a burden?
You see those women that are here? They have someone always with them at the clinic. So when you're admitted, a family member should be there. Now, it's the mom that is there. That means no one is cooking at the house. One child is supposed to be there. Who is making sure that there is food? Transportations. So let's turn it the other way around. You, the mom, and your daughter is got diabetes. You only make $1 US a day. And she needs $3 US a day to survive.
Mm-hmm.
She can go to school because she's always sick. But all your expenses is going toward her, your emotions, your time. And you end up loving her more than the other kids because she needs you more.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, she's going to be an obstacle for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Because when she's admitted, the mom has to stay with her. Someone has to look for money. Someone has to cook. Someone has to take the food to the clinic. You see how many resources?
Yeah.
I have a lady, a young girl here. She's light skin. Have you seen her? They call her Naomi.
Oh, like she's working here in your house?
Yeah, she's
here. Yeah, we saw her. Yeah.
If I didn't take her here, she would have died. Because they were tired of her. It's not they didn't love her, but they couldn't.
Yeah, it's just too much burden.
Mm-hmm.
And I took her. She's having a life now. She goes to school. Her diet, sugar is well controlled. Because I got money, I can feed her, I can give her the medications.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you know, I had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to give them insulin for free. And there are lots of people for the last 15 years that we started the program are still alive because of this program.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a few,
mm-hmm.
but so many people are alive today because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because the treatment costs for type 2 diabetes, it's about, I would say, $20 US a month. But those people don't make $1 US a month. And if you're type 1, it's $3 US a day.
One of the things that I've always found is interesting when it comes to, like, Haiti is a very, like, spiritual place.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question exactly. So between the Christian faith, the Catholic faith, voodoo, the, like, all of the things that are kind of mixing it. When something bad happens in Haiti, oftentimes people will make an assumption that someone's cursed somebody and there's voodoo present. We don't need to get fully into a voodoo conversation, although I think we would appreciate to hear a little bit of your perspective on that, whether it's now on this recording or a different time. But one of the things that I've always seen you do in terms of helping people is not only do you help them heal them medically, but you've been a real advocate for pointing out what is a medical issue and this what is a spiritual issue.
This is, I think this is my mission as a Christian.
Yeah.
To fight voodoo. I don't say fight voodoo. I don't have to fight voodoo because voodoo is a spiritual world. It's been there before I was born. It will continue to be there. They give too much credit to voodoo by ignorance. And if that's what I call victory. Every time that I can convince someone that your problem is medical, it has nothing to do with voodoo, you create community.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what important for me. Because voodoo destroys community.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because most of the time, even you get sick, when they go to a voodoo priest, they would tell him, it's the feet of the chicken that is broken the eggs.
Yeah.
Do you understand what that means?
No.
Okay. That has to do with poultry. I know that.
Chicken. Two or two chickens that can live in one area.
Yeah.
Okay. Or one chicken in one area. When they lay an egg, eggs belongs to one chicken. Other chicken could lay the eggs in the same nest.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those chicken can break one egg.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that it's someone in your neighborhood, someone in your sick inner cycle that put a curse on you.
And that's why you're sick. Yes. That's why this bad thing
is. So imagine that you really sick, you are suffering, and a voodoo priest tell you, it's someone in your inner cycle. So now you're going to look at Tara.
It's got to be Tara.
So you won't trust her anymore.
Yeah.
You won't trust Pastor Christine. Do you see? He might want my place. So you won't be able to work with anybody because there's mistrust. And this creates poverty.
And poverty is a byproduct of a broken community.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So once someone was really sick and they were, when they say, I have so many stories like this, I would tell you, of people that was really sick, that was wanting to die, and the family said, once he died, we're going to cut the head of all those family because they are the only responsible. And it happened before.
Yeah.
It just pointed out it was Tara, and when this person died, someone would come with a machete, just
killed her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you come in the middle of that, and this has been some of your biggest victories.
Yes. So to tell the people that, you know, you're sick because of that.
Yeah. You got bad sugar.
Yes. And if we do this, do that, you will feel better. And it's not a supernatural thing, it's natural, because some family member, it's trying to explain to those people why they're sick. Because the Haitian people, I don't know why, I can explain, when they go to see a doctor, they don't ask what's wrong. You see, you know, you give them the medicine and they go. So I try to explain to people what's going on.
What's happening in their body.
What's happening.
Mm-hmm. It's education so as much as it's...
So in return, they can go and tell other people that not all those things have to do with voodoo. I'm not saying that voodoo cannot do anything. I'm not saying that. I've seen things that I don't have explanation. What I believe, education, fighting ignorance should be a Christian mission.
Mm.
Because when there is ignorance, when there is darkness, that's what the devil is powerful. That's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So give people in any way, so when people come and find people that care, you have to ask yourself why this person is that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you've been touched by an angel. A part of angels should stay on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said. So there's no way that for you to be any place with someone with goodness in it, some piece of goodness should stay on you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like I met this bad doctor. I met Dr. Steve. It's those people that you will meet in life that will make who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, you have to pay back.
Yeah.
Try to do the same thing. People that will cross you. Every time you get on an airplane, it's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Not to preach, but to love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To show compassion.
So because you...
It happened to me before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what it means when someone treat you with dignity, with love, you know, without knowing who you are. They just respect your dignity as a human being.
One of the things we were talking about just last night was like, what's the value of having groups come here? We're the first group back for a long time since COVID has taken place. And we kind of ended up just talking about, well, what does it mean to pay attention to what we see and how do you value people? And I've been really caught on this whole topic of like to bear witness to somebody's story and what's happening in their life. So I'm curious, what is it meant for you to bear witness to your patients and the stories that they live? And you're doing more than bearing witness, but you're hearing their story. That's one of the fascinating things I find about you is that as I listen to you talk about your patients, you can tell us and send us a lot of really nasty pictures. You do that. And you do. But you almost always tell the story of the person. And on Unpack That, it's like we care a lot about story and we believe that stories get messy. So what is that about?
Every human being is unique. It's the way we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question about having group coming in is to open their mind. I feel blessed I was able to go to Canada, to the States, and see changes. And every time I come back with new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And we want those people to come, to see, to understand the world that they are living in, and to take responsibility. So, you may not be, you're in Canada, you're in your bubble, but your action could be affecting someone way in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We were fine. Still, one day Ukraine and Russia wanted to fight.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? There was no wheat. In Africa, people are dying with hunger. So we want people to understand that, you know, the decisions
that they make
that they make might have a bigger impact and come to see it here. So we want people to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And whether you like it or not, when if you happen to go to the space, you won't be looking at, you won't say you're looking at Canada. When you see this big blue thing, you know what you will say? Home.
You're not wrong.
When those astronauts are way up there, they're looking at home. They want to go home. It's this, they are suffering from this big blue thing. So if we see it as our home, let's everyone take his responsibility.
Yeah. Just a couple more questions for you. The first is, I want to wrap this up. So you want to be a part of the solution or the problem?
I want to be part of the solution.
Okay. And how, so 15 years ago, you've come across one diabetic patient that you can't care for. Yeah. Today, how many diabetic patients?
No, it's, at one point they were like 500, but they keep dying or they keep going to other places. They keep changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, well, diabetic become my world. And it's hard to sometimes, because after 10 years of seeing a person every month, especially it's not a patient anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a family member almost.
It's a family member. So you need to care for them. And it's like every day it's a miracle. It's a miracle every day. Help come from where it wasn't expected.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What do you love about this place? You stayed here. And you could have left. So why are you still here?
Okay, I have to admit, okay, to be honest, you know, because people always have, you know, the good reason and the real reason.
Yeah, yes.
We have to say that. Okay.
Yeah.
This place has given me the opportunity to be who I want to be. For me, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings happiness to me. So I love what I'm doing. I don't think I can do it a better way in other places.
A better way in other places.
Yeah. It's, I've been to many places. I talked to other doctors. And actually one doctor told me that, you know, I spent more time filling papers than see patients. But he makes lots of money. And he said, you know, you spend more time with patients than caring about bills.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have to choose two lives, what would I choose? I would choose, and this person would like to be with patients.
Yeah.
But the reality where he is, you know, he happened to be with her. But here, I can't complain. And if there's one thing that is like, it's the miracle. One day, there was this young girl called Rachel, pastor's daughter, came to work with me. We had our first nebulizer, and we were entering summer, and we didn't have support at this time from, you know, we're at the very beginning. My first day of work, she was here for me. And I was able to work at the clinic, started to work because she was paying money to stay at the house. This money was used as an income for expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I told you that I came with 100 from Kathy.
Yeah.
So how would you explain this? She decided to come right at the moment that I move here. And I was able to make some money with the money that she was paying. So that's nothing. Let's not be, how do you call it, superstitious. But watch this. I don't know where she got the nebulizer for us, but we had one. And we were using it. We were getting a lot of asthmatic. We were excited. We were fixing people, helping people breathe. One day, the generator that we had, the small one, just overrun the current, burn it. She came to me. Mano, the nebulizer broke, burned. What are we gonna do with the asthmatic patients? I don't know why I said it. If it was serving God, he will provide another one. The day hasn't finished yet, and we got a call. A group of missionaries that was in Cape are leaving, and they have a nebulizer. They don't know what to do with it. Do we need it? Take it. I see those things every day. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you want to call this. So working here has given me faith to trust in something. Mm. And that's what I enjoy. It's like you have a connection with the higher. Someone is in charge. Yeah. That's what I love.
Yeah. Mm.
Would I be able to do this in another place? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is where I'm functioning, this is where I'm working. That's where.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have a family. You didn't say you had a family at the beginning of this. You have a wife? Can you tell us a little bit about that and then you had a question still. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you want to know the good part of having a wife?
Is she going to want to hear it?
I'm a little scared, but okay. Yeah, I think so.
I'm saying, my hair was all dark. I had no blood pressure. Once I have a wife, I have a high blood pressure. My hair is getting white because there's no way when you're married, you're going to die healthy.
So, she's not going to want to hear that.
That's how I keep telling him.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you're telling us about some impossible decisions that you have to make on the daily with your patients and people coming into the clinic and how you manage that. So how do you manage that in your heart when your heart is broken? How do you care for yourself?
The truth is, I always try to finish the day. So every night, almost every night, I would disappear. Either for I would take a Guinness, sitting in a bar, listen to music. Don't look at my phone, just disconnect. Mm-hmm. I try not to take today's problems, on a continuing basis. That's to make a pause. Mm-hmm. For me, it's important. But it's a hard decision. You know what it means when you take a decision to save someone's leg, you use the salary of people that are working with you. Mm-hmm. In 2 weeks, they are looking at you, they say, they say that, we need our paycheck. We have kids to take care of. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And it's all those things that end up giving me high blood pressure.
It's not the wife.
It's not just the wife. Because every time my phone rings and it's here, what's wrong?
I have so much respect for you.
I respect it too.
And the way that you have, I have so much respect for the way that you have chosen to live your life. And I've never seen you to ignore truth, even when it's hard. So I think in a world right now in particular, we're sitting in Haiti and a lot of Haitians are making plans or have already made plans to leave this country. And you've chosen to stay. And you've consistently chosen to stay. And I know that wasn't always easy.
So here's the problem. And I'm going to ask you this. You want to be part of it? There's a hole on this world. You see it?
No.
A hole on the world, okay? Mm-hmm. You see it? And it's dark. Someone on the motorcycle hit the road. Flip over. Two people got killed. Are you responsible? But what if you had filled the hole? Because you saw it.
If I'd seen it.
Yeah, that's nice. You
then
saw
I would
it.
Be responsible.
So this is it. So it's when you don't do it, does it mean that you're not guilty?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I see life sometimes. And there are lots of things that is happening in our neighborhood. One way or another, you are responsible. This kid that they are bullying, you could be different from him. If you pay attention to this kid problem, so that's the way I see it. It's like, I want to live. I would like to have a better life. But what about my patients?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To know that who is going to look for the insulin for them. It's like I feel responsible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's not that I'm a better person. No, I feel responsible. I have a responsibility. I cannot ask any other person to take care of my daughter except me. It's the same way. It's my community. I have to do something.
Yeah.
And then we told you what I have back. I may never die. Yeah, that's about eternity. You did something and your name will last forever.
Yeah.
That's the good part of it. Because, it would be sad to come in this world and you go and no one, you're not missed. I feel important. I'm making some changes, and I enjoy it. And hopefully, I will as when they are talking here, they talk about the henices that came. That this maybe one day they will talk about Dr. Mano to be maybe an example for other kids.
Well, you have been that.
Yeah. For
sure. Just even the amount of young men and women from this community that have gone into healthcare.
Yes,
because whether that's doctors or nurses or others, because they saw you do it, it's a pretty astounding amount of young people that are out there. And so I think you have done that already, and I don't see you stopping anytime soon. So I
would like to have a bigger influence. It's like I see changes one person at a time. And to make the story short, so we have some young kids here. Then maybe we have kids that are listening. So what I usually ask them, maybe I ask you this question is.
What's that one?
Yeah. Now listen, you don't have to give me the answer now, but imagine now you are getting dressed. It's Friday afternoon, you're going to a funeral. You are getting dressed. And then you arrive to that place and in the coffin. It's you. And you're sitting there. And someone is going to talk about you. Your dad will say nice thing about you. Your mom, your sisters. But other people that know you better than him, what would they say about you? Today, right now. So, and while we're sitting here, what would you like people to say about you? How would you like to be remembered? So this is the journey that we are taking a lot of is maybe we don't know when we are doing it, but everything that we are doing, we are leaving some footprint how to be remembered. And it's starting today. It's not that when you're getting old, no. Obama was president, he was 45. Mm-hmm. So when it's age doesn't matter. Think about how you would like to be remembered. And
start living that way.
Yes, start living that way. And you will be happy. And If you see a problem, stop solving it. I don't think you want to solve the whole world problem. If it's in your capacity to solve it, do something. Or talk about it in a positive way. Create consciousness about it. No, do something about when you identify a problem. Do something to solve it. And what you want to receive, start giving it. That's the way I see life. If you look at her, you smile. She will smile at you. If you want the smile from her, give it to her first. You would give it back. And that's life.
Yeah, that is a great example. Like if you want somebody to smile, you smile that smile at them.
Yes, and then you will receive it. So start giving what you want to receive.
Wow. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
You even told a couple of stories I haven't heard before.
I'm sorry. But I laugh at it. But I wish everyone could make a joke at themselves. Don't take yourself too seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be able to laugh at yourself. And have other people laugh at you, you know, at your expense.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Well, thanks for letting us record the story. Always good.
It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If this episode or the podcast has been helpful to you in any way, it would mean so much to us if you would take just 30 seconds to do one or all of these three things. First, follow or subscribe to the Unpacked podcast. This helps you never miss an episode, and it goes right to your device. And it helps us so more people can find it too. To do this, head to the show page on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Then just look for the follow or the plus sign and click it. It's so important to us and it would mean so much. And hey, while you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a review, preferably 5-star, and share an episode with a friend that you found helpful, we would be so grateful. We are so, so grateful for this little online community. And if you're looking for more ways to support or exclusive content, you can head to our Patreon account and you can find that in the link in our bio. Again, thanks for listening.